Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 285 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and with me today is Emil Evanesian. And this week, we basically got a two-part La Ronda. We got so many good questions that we're splitting them up into two. Emil, you got the, I guess, the short straw of going first? I don't know.
Let's do it. I like it. Let's see what everybody's got.
Yeah, so half today and half on the second show, which will come out either tomorrow or the next day. But we do start this one with a, I think, a pretty fun question. We got some hard questions, Emil. So I started with a fun question for us, one that doesn't require us to put our necks out there for anything. So Hamza asks, is there any player in the current Barca team that starts in every other team in the world?
So my gut is yes. I mean, probably Frankie de Jong, right? I mean, I realize there's tactical and stylistic differences, so there might be something. But if we're just kind of saying everyone plays, you know, I mean, I guess just on talent and kind of raw aptitude and adaptability, I'd say probably Frankie. I'm going to go with him. Do you have a second one?
Well, I have some caveats. Yeah, I said De Jong, I think, walks into every team in the world. I think he's the answer to this question if there's just one. I think Pedri, just thinking about some of the best teams around the world, I still think Pedri is useful for a lot of those teams. And I think he would still carve his way into most first 11s. Then I also had Memphis on every non-PSG Man City team in the form that he's in. And so our second question is evolving.
Yeah, that's where I kind of ran into trouble. I was sort of...
There's no way he starts for Man City or PSG, obviously, with their front threes. But most players wouldn't, right? Even for Man City, how many of Man City's front three would start for PSG? None, right? Exactly.
Well, how many of Man City's world class attackers start for Man City?
That's very true.
I mean, there's at least one world class attacker who does not consistently get a game there.
Yeah. So yeah, certainly Memphis, I think, is somewhere on that list, and then Ter Stegen, I think, is on every team minus PSG, City, Real Madrid, and Atletico Madrid. I think Ter Stegen is probably the starting goalkeeper.
Yes.
Most else other than those four.
But did you say Liverpool too?
And you could go Liverpool too. So
yeah. And I mean, I think he's kind of in a tier with those guys. And, you know, I mean, particularly when he's at his best. I mean,
and Bayern as well, which is unfortunately, that's where the conflict comes, right? That I think Germany.
That's worked against him.
right. So, yeah, I guess not Bayern, but that's only because Manuel Neuer has monopoly on that position. But so I was thinking about PK Alba and Busquets, and they're interesting because I think if they were at other clubs, the time they've been at Barca, they would still be starters at those clubs too.
Right.
Or they would have been shipped out already, would be the inverse of that, where they already would have been sent packing.
Well, exactly.
Or they would actually still be starters, which is weird to say, but Barca and the team functions due to them, not despite them. And I think that would be the case if they had been there. I mean, even John Terry, his last 1 or 2 years at Chelsea, you can't possibly say that he was deserving of being the starter.
Yeah, he didn't need to start every game. Yeah.
But he was institutional. So
yeah, exactly. Now I would say in the case of two of those guys, in the cases of Piqué and Busquets, at this particular stage in their career, and you know, because the caveats that you laid out, they're part of the furniture of Barca, and not only part of the furniture, they're just part of the ethos of the club. And so them starting is more than just what they offer on the pitch. But I would, that's at this point, but I do think if you turn back the clock and kind of say them at their peaks, without caveat, I think you could say, I mean, Busquets almost certainly just strolls into any midfield in the world, and Piqué almost certainly too. I mean, is, you know, just strolls into any back four in the world, you know, each of them powers.
Yeah. And then I think the last one that I will throw out there into the ether is that if Fati returns, how it's always been the if, but 2019 Fati, I think is a question mark to a lot of teams. I think a lot of teams would try to figure out, because again, based on his age, I think a lot of teams would figure out a way to get him playing and get him in their lineups.
Yeah. For Fati, I think the threshold is maybe you can say he starts for 90% of the teams in the world if he comes out in 2019 form. And, you know, if he comes out in 2019 form and maintains that and kind of continues on that trajectory, then yeah, it very quickly becomes 100%, or, you know, the 100 minus City and PSG thing.
Well, yeah, because even like I was thinking about Serge Gnabry, it took him a while to get good. I mean, to reach his potential, if you will, at Bayern Munich. But Fati is very similar to far as goals per minute in his 2019 season to what Serge Gnabry put out last year for Bayern Munich. So, So even a player of his stature, with Serge Gnabry, you think, how could you possibly unroot him in the Bayern Munich starting lineup? Well, I mean, Fati, I think, would be a player that they would consider. I mean, Alphonso Davies, for that same reason, was thrown right into that spotlight. And then 2019, and yeah, unfortunately, we're going to talk about that today and tomorrow, you know, the Bayern Munich stuff. But yeah, so I mean, again, in that A2, who talks about Alphonso Davies, and he has not been the same player actually since that moment in 2019. He's taken a step back, but he's also taken a step back from reaching a world-class ascendancy. All right, so next up is Memphis. Edwin asks, with Memphis hitting form so quick, this question was asked actually before he even bagged a hat trick and an assist against Turkey yesterday international play. So without Koeman, does Memphis still choose Barca?
I mean, probably not, right? I don't know. I mean, so he was going somewhere for free anyway. So he was out of contract. So it's not that Barca got some sort of sweetheart deal on a transfer because of Koeman or anything like that. I mean, he said all the things that you say at a big club when you get there. So if we take everything that he said at face value, he's always wanted to play at Barca. And I do think there is a little bit about, you know, putting the current kind of the chaos in the state and everything aside, Barca is what, a top half dozen in terms of history, prestige, just when you're a kid on the playground sort of thing, that's where you want to play. It's, you know, it's Barca, probably Barca, Real Madrid, Man United, you know, that kind of thing. They're in that elite class. And for a young Dutch star, I feel like the kind of the pipeline of Dutch legends who've passed through, maybe, I think so, because it didn't work for him at Man City or Man United. So what was the other big club option for him?
I think, I think that's where the answer lies. I don't see him getting picked off, because PSG doesn't even take the best talents in Ligue 1 usually. They usually go abroad for those talents. Yeah. So it's not like they would, like Bayern Munich, be picked off in-house. And that would be where I would say is that I think Bayern Munich would have given a call and tried to figure out with Leroy Sané probably on the way out sometime, either January or the summer when the price is right. But other than that, I from reports, I believe in Lyon have had their own financial issues and their own issues behind, you know, behind the scenes. But apparently he was very close to signing that renewal and then didn't, when he did get his agent at least gave him some kind of hint that, hey, you're 27 now. If you want to make that final big move again or try again at a quote unquote big club, now would be the time. So I think he was really considering that Lyon renewal, because he was their player. He was their superstar. He was their talisman. He was deserving of, you know, of all this credit. And just looking at the year he had last year, 42 goals plus assists. So that's 42 total. Put him what, fifth or sixth on that list of most goals plus assists in a calendar year?
I think he was
year.
Fifth. Yeah, I think it was Messi. It's Messi, Lewandowski, Haaland, and
I think Mbappe was on that list as well.
Yeah, Mbappe.
Yeah, and so, and then that's in 38 games. So 38 games this year is a really good mark. And that was enough to get him somewhere. But that meant that somebody would have had to overpay him. But even on a free transfer, they're not really overpaying. I think what it is that he did take that pay cut to come to Barcelona to play with Koeman. That's true. I think his wages would not be what they were if he didn't choose Barca. And this, the only thing that makes him likely to have not chose Barca, if another club was throwing a lot higher weekly wages at him than Barca were able to do. So I think that's the difference. So I think Memphis still probably chooses, I mean, he probably chooses to want to come to Barca, and then Barca pick up the phone and say, hey, actually, at the number you want without that, you know, Koeman convincing, we won't be able to afford you.
Right. And so, yeah, that actually makes a lot of sense because, there had to be some sort of financial maneuvering to, particularly if you're getting him for free and he's coming off of the, you know, like you said, the spectacular season that he just had, you would think he could go to market with, and because, I mean, he's still only 27. So even if you're signing him, even if you're concerned about decline after age 30, you're still signing him potentially for three excellent seasons. And yeah, so I mean, yeah, that's where maybe the sweetheart deal came in, is in the wages that he agreed to. Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, I think, like you said, Bayern is probably the only other one. And I know I don't want to paint the entire league with this brush, but I think, like in the Premier League, if someone who isn't English tends to go to the Premier League and has a really bad time and sort of busts out, it almost feels like, with maybe one or two exceptions, it seems like almost league-wide, they're kind of written off as like they weren't that good. And even if you ascend to stardom elsewhere, it becomes the, you know, the wet windy night at Stoke thing. And, you know, you couldn't do it here, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know if that's absolutely what would have happened, but Bayern
the exception Premier being those, all those Chelsea players that so often Chelsea cast off, like a Kevin De Bruyne, like a Romelu Lukaku, they go elsewhere, light the world on fire, return to the Premier League. And then Chelsea goes, wait, was that our player? And but that's
Chelsea hadn't signed alone. Actually, when you said if Chelsea hadn't signed Lukaku, Memphis might have been interesting there, but I don't know that he necessarily would have wound up there. But just as a thought exercise, he'd be interesting there.
Agreed, because they didn't really have, striker was the one position they didn't have, and he didn't necessarily fill that role either. He basically does what Timo Werner does, except he uses his trickery instead of his speed, not to simplify the players in that way. But all right, so now to a question from Bachir. Do we know the real terms of the Griezmann deal? And luckily for you, Bachir, according to Laporta, who had a press conference right after you asked the question, Griezmann must play 50% of the matches he can take part in for the purchase option of Atleti to become mandatory at 40 million euros. He has also taken a 40% pay cut to basically sweeten the deal so that Barca could offload him and could afford him. So the 40% pay cut too. And then the second year also would go into effect, meaning Atleti would have a year before he becomes a free agent, which is the same thing that Barca would have dealt with anyway because of the length of his contract, which basically means that, to me, this should happen in year one. The really telling thing, though, Emil, was that Laporta also said what we all knew. I think we all expected something from him, but he gave everything. He didn't fit in our system. He was not the player we needed. He always had a good attitude and was professional. I sent him a message wishing him to do well. And I think that basically sums up most Kool-Aid's opinions, right?
I was going to say, that sounds about right.
Really hard, but he just, again, I say it that Francesca and I, years ago, said, I don't know about this. Where's he going to play? Where's he going to fit? And if anything, now that Messi was gone, I mean, I know it was only two matches and a preseason, still didn't make sense to me. It's somehow a new player arrived and it just still didn't make sense. Fati wasn't even back yet and still didn't make sense.
Yeah, I agree. No, I think that perfectly kind of sums up the whole thing. I mean, even when you could tell that he was very frustrated and the breaks weren't going his way, or he wasn't getting the ball as he wanted, or, you know, finding the net and things like that, he seemed like he was a decent teammate. Like, he didn't seem like his head was down, or he was a malcontent or kind of a problem in the dressing room or anything. No, I think he worked hard. Like, he's a really good player. It was just a bad fit and a bad situation for a really good player.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, it's so weird too with the decision and how all that went down with the documentary. And apparently, I mean, I would believe it if some of his teammates didn't particularly take to him quickly in the locker room. But I think he was well-liked, you could see. And I mean, yeah. We don't want to read body language to play that game, but he just seemed to be a fun guy that his teammates did enjoy being around. And, I wonder how much professional respect he was garnering, though. I think when the moments got tough, that's when we don't see, right? Because Alba, we see one camera angle from that halftime against Liverpool, not knowing anything else. And that's going to define a defining image of Alba's career is those tears that he shed. And so when the going got tough, we don't know what Griezmann was like behind closed doors. We don't know what that was like. Mm-hmm. And you assume that maybe his teammates didn't fully get on board with, you know, he didn't really help. Let's say he didn't detract or people didn't hate him, but maybe he also didn't help in those big moments either, which you'd hope that every team did. And, you know, I'm interested too, to play the body language game. I was watching, it was going on Twitter yesterday, how João Felix is now, you know, it was a regular defensive drill, but when you looked at the faces who was in that drill, it was all defenders plus João Felix, as if Diego Simeone. And I don't know, I think professional social media accounts are quite smart. Maybe they are. And that he knew that was happening. And he did this on purpose just to make people believe, hey, are you going to convert him into a wingback? I mean, that becomes easily, if he plays wingback, 120 million euros. We joked about it, that's maybe where Griezmann should go. But if Simeone actually does put his 120 million player at fullback, that is full Diego Simeone. That is the epitome of Diego Simeone.
Oh, I mean, that would be peak Cholismo. I mean, it would just be the greatest thing. Well, I mean, the greatest frustration in watching an Atleti game, particularly if you want a certain, and I don't necessarily mean I want every match to end 4-3 or 5-0 or anything like that. But I've watched Atleti games where they come out and they look good. They're moving the ball. Everything's kind of going fluidly. They can't seem to find the goal. The hallmark Atleti game is where they score at about 38 minutes and batten down the hatches till halftime. And then the entire second half, it's like no one can breathe. But I've always taken it to believe that Diego Simeone feels that any scoring more goals than is absolutely necessary to win this particular game is somehow, like, I don't know, gauche. So I could absolutely see him just putting apex attacking talent at wingback.
Yeah, I mean, I know Barca doesn't have any money now, but that's something where I understand how Atletico Madrid want to make good on that investment. Obviously, just like Barca with Coutinho and Antoine Griezmann, while the wages are not as high because he was a younger player, now Felix's agent is going to be motivated to try to figure out how to make sure he gets that next contract. Because remember, he came at, what was he, 19 when he came from Benfica?
He's only
21 now.
21, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, just like what we talked about, ES Moriba, I know it was a huge transfer and I know his wages are high for a 21-year-old, but he's still waiting on that next payday or that next renewal or that next extension. And right now, with him in the position he's in, his agent and the player don't have the negotiating leverage they need to, especially with outside clubs. If he were to, I think his contract's till at least 2023, 2024. So he really has no options other than kind of sticking it out and making the best of it. And again, Atletico Madrid even though Diego Simeone might say, hey, I'm not really using him, the club so trusts in Diego Simeone. It's one of those rare examples where the manager does have more power than that player, but that player is so valuable that you can't possibly have a good conscience about offloading him. And so if I'm Barca, I'm like, hey, in a year, maybe you guys scratch our backs again because we gave you Griezmann and we maybe help you win the league again, just like we gave you Suarez. So how about you give us your want away really expensive player on loan, just like we gave Coutinho to Bayern Munich. We'll see what happens, right? Like, if I'm Barca, I'm really pushing for that next year, if they're not already for January.
Yeah, I think that would make a lot of sense. And I mean, I think the good thing is that, and I'm trying to think through this comparison that I want to make, because it's not a perfect like-for-like comparison, but I think among managers today, I mean, because Liverpool has kind of the transfer committee. I know Klopp has significant influence and very much has a voice in that room. Yeah. But I think of Diego Simeone is probably the closest thing to like almost an Alex Ferguson style manager, where he completely occupies and embodies the club that he's at.
Right.
And every decision goes through him. And to an extent, like, I don't know if he's bigger than the club, but he is bigger than any other individual at the club.
I mean, 100%. And we'll have to see whoever comes after him or whoever comes after him or her. It's interesting with Diego Simeone in the future with Atletico Madrid, because he led them into their, I mean, again, not to be all history buff or whatever, but you know, this is the second great era, if you will, in Atletico Madrid history. But the first one was like, I think in the 30s. So
yeah, they won like 5 or 6 back then. I think.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you're really talking about the greatest modern era Atletico Madrid, and it's gone on almost for a decade.
Also when he was on the team in, I wrote about this one time. So I wrote about the 96-97 Barca team, but in doing so, I did kind of research on the 95-96 season, and Atleti won the domestic double that year, and Diego Simeone was on that team.
Right.
And so he's kind of everything that he's been alive for and he could possibly have been present for that's been great in this last 3 decades of Atletico football has been, I mean, he's been there. His fingerprints are all over it.
Right. And it seems like in world football right now, Griezmann, going back to Griezmann and Bichir's question, trying to put a bow on this, that Griezmann is a player that Simeone enjoys and likes.
Yeah.
And Deschamps is basically the only other manager that's like, yeah, we really like this guy. We really think he can do a job in our system.
Well, I think the funny thing is what we, and I mean, Barca fans and probably behind the scenes, whether it was the coaches or players or anything, what we were trying to talk ourselves into with Antoine Griezmann is these are real qualities that he has. The tireless work rate and kind of the ability to hold the ball up and, you know, sort of the play the tight little exchanges and things like that. These are things that are recognizable qualities, but we were talking ourselves into them because we wanted him to be just pumping in the goals or, you know, at least trying to more or something like that. But that, I think, is almost more than goal scoring. That's what Diego Simeone wants from his strikers, is a never-ending just wellspring of stamina and a willingness to run and hold up the ball and take the air out of it too when they need to kind of really control the tempo of a game.
Yeah, and I think we're simplifying it, but we kind of said it, and the numbers back it up, that Atletico Madrid can win the title by scoring less goals than Barcelona because they concede less. So if Antoine Griezmann gets one goal in a game and Atletico Madrid wins 1-0, that counts for the same 3 points when he would have had to score a brace for Barcelona because they're in a 3-2 shootout because they got caught in the counterattack. So we're almost expecting that he has to score more goals for Barcelona to win because of some of the frailties on the counterattack. So we're going to keep that Griezmann train rolling here with Pancho. Do you think Messi, Griezmann, and Pjanic leaving will help in future transfer windows? And, you know, I'm a bit divided on this. We've said before that those were done to help the club get back to zero. A reminder even that just because Messi and Griezmann left doesn't mean that Griezmann or Messi could have been kept at all. And we have some stuff we're going to talk about tomorrow kind of on that level. But as far as getting the club back to zero, which they aren't even at yet, the wage bill is still too high percentage-wise. But yes, in theory, once Barca is back to a healthier place, they can spend. And the idea of living in Barcelona and playing for such a prestigious club, which a ton of players grew up idolizing, will want to play for the club. In theory, yes, it should help in future transfer windows because the wage bill is going to be manageable. And the club, based on the revenue it makes, even without Messi, it's going to be lesser. But the revenue that FC Barcelona makes, remember, Barcelona did exist financially as a giant of world football before Messi. And it will continue to be for a long, long time. The days are going to get very, very dark for them to kind of lose that prestige. Because even the likes of an Arsenal still have so much money. They still have so many fans. And, you know, for those who like Arsenal and Barcelona, I mean, Arsenal kind of stink, right? I mean, they kind of stink.
I mean, they're effectively like kind of a pseudo mid-table club in England now. And that, depending on the week, is a little bit generous. But I mean, I do think, yeah. So I mean, in the very functional sense, yeah, this helps right now because you got to get back to zero at some point and you have to clear the decks. And these were three of the larger earners. I mean, I think in the cases of Messi and Griezmann, I think they were the top two, right? Yeah. And these were the necessary evils. This was the medicine that had to be taken. And I do think beyond that, there's also the issue of the squad, because some of these, and I know these contracts would eventually run down in the next 2 or 3 years, but there's the issue of a lot of people were signed and there was just sort of log jams at various places. Even if you know a guy's not really going to play much, like we knew Pjanic wasn't going to play, but he's still pulling a pay, you know, before he goes, he's still pulling a paycheck and occupying a place on the ledger.
Yeah.
So, I mean, in that sense, yes, as part of a larger clearing the decks and I guess just clearing everything out and trying to get the slate back to clean, I think it does. In the immediate term, not really, because like you said, there still has to be this period of austerity and cost cutting. But, you know, maybe in a year and a half, 2 years or something, we see a little bit of the benefit of that.
Right. I mean, it talks about, I don't want to do MTT today. I'm hoping we don't do him tomorrow either. But with him still at the club, the eye that he holds, same thing with Coutinho, that now you look around and you say, hey, Griezmann, when all is said and done, because we were having dialogue about just Messi was gone and it's a club without Messi. But no, Pjanic was sent out even after the transfer window closed. Griezmann was sent to Atletico and you got, again, him to take a pay cut and a huge percent of, you know, his wages are off the books this season as well. So,
yeah,
you know, when all is said and done and all the salary reductions that were done for the three of the four captains, with Sergio Roberto still working on his, and Dembele looking to renew at a smaller number, in theory, as much as we really criticize not being able to get any of those, we'll say, lame duck players off the books, and that would have been able to keep Messi. In fact, most of those lame duck players have been sent out, and Messi was also needed to be sent out. That's how dire it was, you know? Yeah. And I agree, tomorrow we'll talk about, we still don't know all of what was possible with Messi, but what we do know is that the club is going to, in theory, be a bit successful in getting everybody off the books, but they'll have to see how permanent those are. As we even talked about with the Griezmann answer, 50%, it means that either Simeone is going to use him or he isn't. I think you're going to know that pretty quick. Either Simeone is going to want him, he's going to start every match, or he's going to be on the bench and not going to be willing to pay the $40 million. But I again say it's very, very likely that Leti doesn't make this deal unless Diego Simeone is asking for Griezmann and wants to play him in 50% of games and is willing to pay $40 million on him, which is a third of what Atleti paid. I mean, were given when Barcelona bought him.
Right. So, and I do think kind of my understanding of, admittedly a little bit rudimentary, but not completely, not totally remedial. But I think the way that club and that fan base is, I don't think there was, for them to even bring him back, period, I don't think there was animosity from the fans, because my understanding of how the relationship between the fans and the club works is that if all of the fans had turned on Antoine Griezmann and hated him and never wanted to see his face again, it would be just a vicious and brutal scene, you know, not literally physically brutal, but, you know, it would just, they would make that abundantly clear. So if anything, this is, and that's kind of what I mean with Simeone embodying the club so much, for him to bring Griezmann back, he has to know that that's going to play well on a PR front.
Yeah.
The fans aren't going to feel like you've brought back this, you know, a traitor or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. So, the manager at Atletico Madrid says, hey, I want this player, so you should too. And they do. Whereas Koeman is trying to, I won't say gaslighting, but he is trying to kind of talk up and gas up Coutinho and be like, hey, Kool-Aids, I got this Brazilian player. He's finally healthy. This is going to be great. And last time around, he scored 2 goals in the Champions League against the club. And yeah, he played fine last at the beginning of last fall. But I mean, even that sample size as compared to the rest of the 4 years that he's been at Barcelona is worrying. Okay, so now, Douglas, given the amount of matches first team players will play this season and the number of World Cup qualifiers, will this season come down to who can manage their injuries the best?
Yes. I mean, it's who can manage injuries, or I suppose who has the greatest depth coming in, who can absorb the most injuries, I suppose. But Yeah. I mean, I think it's just going to be a, I don't know if it's absolutely going to be a war of attrition, but with a couple of bad breaks in one league or another, you could get a title run in that is, you know, third strikers and backup midfielders and that sort of thing where, yeah, because I mean, these guys are playing so many games and so many of these games, especially the international fixtures and the European fixtures, call for, in some cases, just really grueling travel too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's physical injury. There's, I mean, simple just fatigue and exhaustion, which, you know, we kind of don't talk about, but, you know, just because you have a massive paycheck, you don't get tired.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be the teams that have, obviously the teams that have more international players are, it goes both ways. The teams that have the most international players are most impacted by this, but those clubs also seem to be the ones that have more money and tend to have deeper squads. So you have, if not like for like, you at least have an able-bodied replacement. But yeah, I mean, I think to kind of rephrase the original question a little bit, it's going to be who manages their injuries best, or I guess gets lucky with health most, or has the most existing squad depth already.
But I do think this probably applies to Barca this season more than other teams. Yeah. Even Serginho Dest going down, it was the alarm bells were ringing because Barcelona are now going to say, hey, Oscar Mangueza, who's just coming back from injury himself, spending the whole summer at the Olympics being injured, that you're going to probably have to be the right back because we don't want to put Sergio Roberto back there.
Yeah.
And in the scrimmage, in the friendly, if you will, the 2-1 win against AU Prat, that Roberto played in the midfield and Mangueza played at right back, kind of setting up what we might expect to see against Bayern Munich. Dest does have that rolled ankle. It's not great, but also Dest did have to travel internationally across to North America. And he also had to spend time in both El Salvador and in Honduras to handle, you know, this world, like the three World Cup qualifying games. He gets hurt against Canada. They usually only ever did two. Back in the day, they used to do one. So yeah, I mean, it's just, it's so much football.
Well, and the thing is, like, so 2 points. One, everything, all the stuff that we were talking about, unfortunately, Barca 2021, 2022, Barca sort of falls on the wrong side of all of it in terms of it's not an exceptionally deep team. It's a team that's already dealing with some injuries. And then you have, you know, European football on top of, you know, just about everybody in the starting 11 is an international, you know, maybe, but most of the starting 11 are internationals.
Well, see, that's actually going to jump in. That the positive for Barcelona is that they have fewer internationals than most of the other big, big teams in world football, but still most in other teams in the Liga. So the Liga teams are going to be training and getting ready.
Right.
When you're talking about the Champions League sides, you know, Man City sends double the number, especially with Pedri having his time off. Yes. Now, the one caveat is that if Memphis or De Jong goes down, that would be cataclysmic for Barcelona.
Yes.
It would just be a mess. I mean, take 10 points off of Barcelona in whatever time they're gone.
That's kind of the thing. I mean, like and then there's depth in a couple of different ways. So there's depth in the sense of just having capable, able-bodied people that you can throw in. But then there's the depth for having a contingency if one of your two or three linchpin players goes down because I agree. It's, if two or three, you know, if you're seventh, eighth, and ninth best, even in your starting 11, but your seventh, eighth, and ninth best players get hurt, that's awful. And you have to scramble and you have to replace them. That's easier done than replacing your truly kind of unique playmaker or your unique attacker.
The goalkeeper, even the
goalkeeper is a really good one too. Start. Yeah.
Hadafe only had the kind of pressure that they had because Neto couldn't really hit those long balls out of the back the way Ter Stegen does. And I know we get on Ter Stegen sometimes for making poor decisions, but his balls are so much more accurate to playing out to the wings and alleviating those pressure. So if you're facing, and again, there's going to be a lot of Bayern stuff, especially the first show next week, but against Bayern Munich, if it's Neto instead of Ter Stegen, but it should be Ter Stegen. If it's Neto instead, though, you're not going to have those release valves up the flank for those long balls, Alba. And I mean, I would say hopefully Dest in that situation just to deal with that kind of pressure. And the one thing I'll end this question with is next season with the World Cup in the winter in Qatar, it's going to be even worse. but certainly yes to this season throughout the year. And we also were reminded that it's in the background, especially as Europe continues to get vaccinated a bit better and the booster shots come in different places, but there is still a COVID crisis going on. And we're not on time to get into it here, but what happened with Brazil and Argentina and all that stuff, I mean, remember, that is still an ongoing issue. That is still something happening. Yeah. And, you know, even the US, they had the Weston McKennie thing, which is a lot on that player, sure. But I mean, we don't know what happened, but there's a chance that doesn't happen if there aren't these protocols. And he just maybe did something that he wasn't supposed to, but it would have been something that wasn't that bad if there had been if there hadn't been COVID. But he had, you know, whatever it is. But anyway, we're back to Richard and actually staying in Qatar here for this one. Do you think Xavi will return next season? And if so, what kind of role would he have? He's obviously going to come back as manager if he comes back. I can't see him doing anything else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, he's not coming back as in some sort of ambassadorial role or something like that.
My answer is boring. Do you have the same boring timeline?
Wait, what do you mean?
I don't think he returns until after the 2022 World Cup.
I think that's the deal. And I don't know. I know nothing about this, but I feel like that's a little bit of the thing. It's, of course, he's getting his feet as a manager and doing all that. And he's doing that there in kind of a lower stakes environment. He's undoubtedly getting paid quite well. And yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that, because one of the biggest sort of issues, we don't need to sort of belabor it for too long, is my greatest frustration with Xavi has been that he's praised Qatar in a manner that makes me moderately uncomfortable. Yeah. And just, he does it very earnestly and kind of talks about, you know, how this is one of the great nations in the world. So I think that's part of the deal, because Qatar needs this World Cup to happen. They need it to go off basically without a hitch. It needs to be the celebration of football that all the other ones are. And so I think the biggest part of that is having this Barca icon, not only just sort of, you know, wear polo shirts that have Qatar Airways on them, but actually living there and actively sort of promoting the nation. So yeah, I think it's going to be, my guess is it will be the 23 season.
It would be the 23-24 season when that would be over. Yeah. So still 2 years.
So it'll be not next season, the season after that, I suppose.
Right. Which is a long time, and a lot of things can happen between now and then. But I mean, he's been an ambassador there for years. And why would that change now? And again, the amount of money, when you're talking about the international competitions, those paid to do the job, it's just so much. It's just astronomical. It's so much more. And you could also get away with a lot of money under the table, if you will. Yeah. And I'm not just going on Qatar. And obviously we'll be very blatant in the questionable human rights violations that are potentially occurring there in building those stadiums. And, you know, it is funny that, isn't South Africa the only country that technically made any bit of a profit as a nation on the World Cup, right? Because the 2014 World Cup wound up in the moment, the profit margins are high because you are making revenue in the moment. Mm-hmm. But due to the expensive stadiums that are built that go to no use, that wind up taking up just mass amounts of land and the construction that needed to be done and the ways in which that area is no longer supporting the local economy, World Cups always wind up costing so much more. And for everything to be said about UEFA or it's about the Super League, and a lot of that stuff is about, you know, whether it's politics or whether it's, you know, your belief about the soul of football. When you're talking about FIFA and some of the things that play the international competitions, right, that the conflict between some of the fans and the violence that happens and occurs when Serbia plays Albania, and when you added Kosovo to the mix and keeping those groups separate, this is an entirely different ball game than, I mean, it's only comparable to, you know, hooliganism in the 80s, right? Where in modern football, club competitions, yes, El Clasico gets crazy. Yes, River Plate and Boca Juniors get crazy.
Right. I could only think of those, like the Uruguay derbies and stuff.
Those Greece rivalries, right? I'm not trying to undermine any club rivalries, but it's a whole different story. The socio-political and the socio-economic and the geopolitical aspects of what FIFA has on their plate to deal with, and the ways in which having a World Cup in Brazil in 2014, then a World Cup in 2018 in Russia, And now the World Cup in 2022 in Qatar, we go, could this have been done better in ways? And, you know, if there are people around the world and say, hey, why is it in the U.S. in 2026? I'm an American. You're an American. We're not perfect either. So, yeah, questions can be raised all throughout the board.
And right.
There are questions on every country. Sure. So before we get too much into the stuff that gets us, you know, not to say to get us in trouble, but to get us skating on thin ice.
Yeah, a little bit of field of the, yeah.
Right. We're going to wrap this up with a show. Question from Polkit. How would you expect Koeman to perform amidst all the pressure of constant rumors of him being replaced? This one kind of goes off the Xavi one. And the easy answer is here. Every Barca manager ever has dealt with that pressure almost constantly.
Yeah, that was, there was, what, there's probably been periods of absolute safety for Cruyff in the early to mid 90s. Pep, you know, sort of at the, you know, circa 09, I guess.
But even the result he got when he first started, I think it was against Cadiz when he failed to get that result.
Was it Hercules or one of them? It was
right. Yes, it was also Hercules. You're right. On the road. Yeah.
Because it started really bad. I remember that. So not even him at the beginning, but once that side had hit its stride, okay, so he was 100% safe. And I don't know, I mean, Luis Enrique, he probably had a minute where he was not, you know, where the knives weren't out, but that was, I can't imagine. I mean, Ernesto Valverde just, I don't think the man ever laid his head down to sleep as Barca manager without everybody just demanding that he be sent out on a rail.
Luis Enrique, you're absolutely right.
I know.
There was that conflict between Jordi Alba and Luis Enrique, which I think supporters had a hard time trying to choose between the two because, I mean, was Alba worth Luis Enrique, the treble winning manager? Sure. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
It became divided and fraught. And I think Koeman, if anything, 20 years, I mean, as much as Barcelona fans might say, get him out of my club, Koeman out, we're done with him already, yada, yada, yada. He has failed much worse at other clubs. You ask Valencia fans what they think of Ronald Koeman, or if you ask, I mean, other than Southampton fans, basically, you ask almost everybody else, other than Feyenoord's the other one. So other than that, I mean, almost every other fan base has said, I definitely turned on him for XYZ reasons over the last 20 years.
I mean, I'm lukewarm on Koeman. I'm not in the faction that wants him out. At the same time, I don't think he's absolutely brilliant and doing a completely flawless job. I think he's doing a perfectly, I don't know, decent, acceptable job, however you want to put it. He's doing the job that he was brought in to do. Yeah, I mean, I imagine he probably doesn't pay it much mind because it's exactly what you said. It's a very select list of managers. And even then, only for select periods of their tenures that have slept easy, not that their job is safe at Barca, but that the discourse around their job is positive.
Well, if anything, Koeman got the summer off because all the worries were about Messi and Laporta. And
yes.
As a manager, Koeman was... even on our show, we went about 2 weeks without speaking his name at all. And then the minute Manchester played again and
you and I talked about it that the, I think you and I talked about it at the time was like when Messi left, it was, I mean, in a way, I suppose fortunate is maybe not exactly the right word, but in a way it was fortunate that he and Koeman never had any sort of, never mind a falling out, but even just really public disagreements or anything like that, because that would have come down on Koeman like a ton of bricks.
Exactly.
Even if there was the perception that, you know, he and Messi just didn't get along or whatever, that would have been absolutely brutal for him. That would have just almost for PR purposes might have done him in. But I think now he's catching what you would almost just call the standard level of grief that comes with the job.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think he gets a bit more grief. Well, he gets a bit less grief in local politics or local media because he is a club legend. And I think with a lot of younger fans on social media and that discourse, they don't really understand just how embedded in Johan Cruyff's philosophy that he was as a player, about what his goal means to the club. And I think over time, younger fans do kind of forget those things. And it doesn't mean that you have to deal with the legends. I mean, dealing with the paychecks and salaries of PK and Alba and Busquets and those treble winners, and more than that, I mean, they've won two trebles. So for some of them. And so, you get in that mess by giving too much to the club legends. And the inverse of that is that you don't really honor your club legends the way you should. And Frances probably said it the best over a year and a half ago, that for Koeman to take this job in this moment where the club is at is almost suicidal. But he also was a manager looking at his background with almost nothing to lose other than leaving the Netherlands job. Job was probably the most successful he'd been in years. So for him to leave that job and come to a house that he already knew was on fire. He could see the smoke. He could see the fire coming out of the windows. And yet he still decided to walk right in because he was a club legend. He wanted to do right by Johan Cruyff. And while he may not be the tactician, there it is, that Johan Cruyff was, he still loves the club. So I think that's it. I don't have anything else to say about Koeman that I won't at least say tomorrow or the next day. But Emil, thanks so much for another edition of La Ronda. Again, if you want to ask these questions, you can hit up the closed Facebook group, answer the three questions. I'll let you in. Behave yourself in the group like most people do. It's called the Barcelona Podcast. You, again, answer the questions. I let you right in. On Patreon, I've had a bunch of new patrons I want to thank for helping me continue to make these shows. Always, always appreciated. And then we are on Twitter and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, where you can get in contact with us. And Barcablog.com. I do have stuff coming out over there. Like, I didn't have any time or room on the show to talk about how La Masia has opened their doors up to 9 young ladies to now join the academy, or to join the residency. So not just the academy, as Patrick has been part of the academy since 2015, and Alexia Bateas as well had come up through the system, but these are players that are now living on site at the residency at La Masia. So once again, La Masia and Barcelona are doing something good, at least for PR purposes, and they're opening their doors. You can read about that on barcablog.com. And so, that's it for me. That's it for Emil. Thanks so much for listening to the Barcelona Podcast. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon. Forza Barça.
Forza Barça.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.